Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello?
Ooh, wow. Okay, it's definitely on now. Hi. Hi. Welcome to the Racket Magazine live, first ever live podcast recording. Very exciting. And it's in London, which is nice. As you can probably tell, I'm British, so I'm neither one of the hosts. So my name is Ro, and very kindly, Caitlin just said, please take the mic for a few minutes and tell people what you do, because that's the kind of woman she is. So I run a women's sport platform called Slow, which is actually, for super tennis history nerds, is named after a tennis player, Lucy Diggs Slow. Don't know if anyone knows her. Anyone? No. She's little known, but worth researching. So that is why I called Slow Slow, because her story really resonated with me, and she was the first African-American woman to win a major sports title in the US. And her story really resonated because she had a whole other career in education, and tennis was just her side thing. And I started Slow 100 years after this, and I thought, wow, how much has actually changed in 100 years? Not that much. A lot of female athletes still do that and still have full-time jobs. And so that's what I started. I started to try and kind of change this kind of scene of women's sport media coverage and really produce something that I wanted to see, really produce like women's sports coverage that I wanted to read and see. So you can find us online, and we do a monthly radio show. And really, the very tenuous link here is that I think for me, being able to just chat to you guys very briefly is a really nice thing, because I think a lot on the podcast, there's been a lot of chat about how, and most recently, Billie Jean King was talking about kind of lifting up younger athletes and lifting up, you know, making space for the new gen. And for me, that's kind of what these independent publications and independent people are doing. They're kind of making the space that they want to see. So yeah, I feel really lucky to tell you guys about what I'm doing, and I've been here all day. I've been screening the Women's World Cup upstairs. So Ace Hotel have been like a very sweet kind of host to us all day. All sorts of women's sports stuff going on, but yeah, I will let you guys get to the main event, what we're all here for. So love to welcome to the stage Renee Stubbs and Caitlin Thompson.
Thank you, Ro. Thank you guys. Thanks so much for joining us on a Sunday in East London. How many of you guys are here for the tennis? I heard some American accents, so thank you. I know this is not close to Southwest 19. Am I correct in assuming that? So thank you.
It's an hour. I just did it.
we're thrilled we're here. You're here. We have some smaller tokens of our appreciation for you guys being in the audience. And then to end the night, we'll give you some more meaningful tokens of our appreciation, but you have to earn them. And we haven't quite decided how you're going to do that, but trust us.
If you listen to our podcast, you realize that we do a lot of things on the fly. Uh-huh. So, but I did decide that I was going to give something pretty cool to six members of our audience.
Six members.
Evening.
So clear, just a preview of that. Clear your schedule for tomorrow. That's all I'll say. But I think
it doesn't have to be tomorrow. It's when they want to go.
Oh, really?
Well, tomorrow or Tuesday. Let's be honest. Maybe Wednesday, but depends on what kind of job you need. Anyway.
Okay, we'll make it work and we'll make it happen, and six of you guys will be lucky. And before that, let me count how many items of merch we have, because I'm going to throw some things at you guys. I've got a tote. I've got some tees. I think you can all tell that these T-shirts look fucking amazing. Right?
Totes.
Totes.
And not a tote.
Oh, boy.
I mean, totally.
Jesus, get me off the stage anyway. So we have, how many would we have? Four? We have four. Three totes and tees, and we're going to start with some tennis trivia. How many of you guys would say you're sort of like diehard tennis fans? I know there's some of you guys. Yes.
All right. Usually
Thank
the ones
you.
In the front. There you go.
Yes, a front.
The ones in the back are here for the drinks.
Drinks. How many is just drinks? Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
And so everyone else is sort of like tennis adjacent, tennis open, tennis sexual, but tennis curious.
It's kind of like the LGBTQ plus movement. It just keeps every single letter starting to be added to like LGBTQ, P-I,
you know. JBC.
Whatever.
You're all welcome here. Okay, so we're going to start with some trivia, and I'm going to try to throw them at you, so get ready.
Also, are you going to throw the T-shirt or the question?
You're going to throw the question. I'm going to throw the tees.
Oh, okay.
For people who shout out things. I can't see where you're pointing at. Yes, just you.
Oh, okay. Wow.
First you. Okay.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
This might be kind of hard, but we're going to start with an easy one.
Are we going with the easy one?
Yeah. Okay. Just to get everyone excited.
He's playing mixed doubles with Francis Tiafoe. Oh,
fuck
Jesus.
Me.
Jesus. All right. Let's
make
bring
this. Enough prizes. I'm going to say
fine.
It was over here, so maybe should
right,
should we be a little bit harder? Just
No, this is this What it was Venus Williams. Yes.
Green, right. Black? I don't even know who I'm throwing this to. Get excited.
It depends.
Extra small. No,
actually, it depends
wide.
On the size of you. There you go.
Empty chair. Great, off to a great
okay,
start.
Sure. Awesome. Should we go with the hashtag?
Ooh, okay.
Okay. So if
no, that's that has to be the last one for reasons I'll explain.
Oh, wow.
Skip that one.
Wow, that's abusive.
I'm telling you, you have to be direct with you.
Okay, you throw out a question.
Okay, where did Nick Kyrgios attempt to peg kind of salty, prissy Rafael Nadal? Chest, yes.
Oh, that was quick.
That was really quick. Good.
All right, get it in there.
I like the confidence with which you asked. And
okay,
I got
good.
It. Yes.
Good,
okay.
Good.
Two more prizes with an extra bonus prize.
I don't know. What did we discuss?
Oh. The highest rated tennis match, which we're going to talk a lot about tonight, because those of you who will be lucky enough to go to Wimbledon tomorrow will see her. What is the highest rated match?
You said her, but it's not.
It is her.
No.
Because you're saying Australia. But I'm saying of all global
media.
Oh, well,
go ahead.
Whose match, I'm looking for one name, and you'll know what I mean in a second. Whose match was the highest rated of all of the Fortnite thus far? Yes. I'm going to give it to you because I think you answered it. Okay. Lastly, tote bag. Okay. This is a great trivia question. By what time on day one do Wimbledon's bars break even?
Oh, this is a good one. If you know this, there's no way you know this. 5 o'clock.
5 p.m. day one. Wimbledon's bars have broken even.
That's unreal.
For the entire fortnight of the tournament.
Yeah.
And if you've been to Wimbledon, you'll see why. Pim's cups by 12 p.m.
Champagne.
There's some lady in Louboutins who's passed out in the bathroom. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty like it's pretty much like for Americans out there, it's like Kentucky Derby every single day after 5 p.m. at Wimbledon, particularly in the Pimm's tents. So,
also, Pimm's is disgusting. Sorry, guys, but... Whew. I mean, am I wrong?
Not after the third one.
You don't even taste them anymore. Just so smooth going down. Okay, this is a very deep insider. How many of you guys have listened to our podcast before, or just like our friends who we've pressured into coming
here? Oh, we love
you
guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, deep cut... Whoever answers this question wins the shirt off my back. Shirt off my back.
Just for...
All right.
I'm going to preface this by saying, Caitlin has an underarm sweating problem, okay? So
it's mostly my back, but okay.
Take it home and wash it first, okay?
Definitely wash it.
All right.
On the back of our matching T-shirts is a phrase that we are trying to launch as a movement to make men empathize with what females of all stripes, but female athletes go through when they get their periods when they are playing sports. Do you know what that phrase is?
Oh my God, we love you guys.
Dick kicks.
Right, there you go.
Should I model it? Dick kicks.
Here we go. We're going to hashtag dick kicks.
Dick kicks.
No, no, no. Well, that's true.
That's also true.
We really want men to understand that what women go through on a monthly basis is quite intense and awful, and the only way for men to really understand that is if you go at their own anatomy. So we decided to hashtag dick kicks so men would truly understand. So therefore you're getting this T-shirt that you're going to have to wash.
It's a women's extra small.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Maybe you can just shred it and wear it as like a muscle tee.
It needs to be on a woman anyway, just an FYI, with that on the back.
No, I would appreciate a man wearing it too, wouldn't I? Maybe you'll just have to report back about what kind of feedback you get from that shirt. We're also going to be taking some questions from the audience. Mark, where are you, Mark? Mark, our trusty Australian stalwart tennis partner I'm going to be playing with tomorrow morning if I don't get too drunk, has offered to sort of filter questions. So I might be handing the microphone, but think of obviously topics you would like to ask. We're going to start off with Coco Gauff.
Yeah, I mean, we want to talk a little bit about the first week in Wimbledon because we're here, and I'm sure all of you or most of you are certainly watching the tennis. And so I guess, Caitlin, we want to talk a little bit about Coco Gauff and the intensity that we've seen. I'm working for ESPN here, and I can tell you, as working for an American broadcaster, the anticipation of her matches, every single day in production, all we can do is talk more and more and more about Coco Gauff, which also brings into the subject of, you know, age eligibility. Is she going to be continuing to be able to play? Where is she going to be able to play now that her ranking's going up? Because she's 15 years of age, she's only going to be able to play a certain amount of events. And the reason for that is because of what we're seeing. The amount of press, the cameras. I mean, her parents, literally every time I turn around, they're doing an interview. It's unbelievable. And they're the nicest people in the world.
Well, and also that kind of greasy scumbag, Patrick Martoglu, he's a good coach, though, no? I mean, but he's kind of really attached himself to this whole train ride. Am I wrong? I mean, these are my words, not yours, because you can get fired and I can't, but... what do you think about his sort of opportunistic, you know, presence in her box?
He's a great advertiser for his academy.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't spend a ton of time there. She spends a lot of time really in Florida.
Yeah.
But, you know, having said that, he kind of attached himself to her and he's really made her believe in herself. And, you know, when you grow up as Coco Gauff and your idols are Venus and Serena, and you get attached to Serena's coach and his entourages and his training facilities, of course it's going to make a difference for her to be thinking that she can live in that world.
Yeah.
But one of the things I want you guys to look at...
So you think that's a good thing?
I think it's a good thing.
The preparation.
The most important thing for any kid of that age or any kind of... You know, I mean, she's going to be a superstar. She is so good at what she does as a tennis player.
Two slams? Five slams? Eight slams?
Calm down.
I'm pretty calm.
I've had
three or four gins.
But, you know, she did say she wanted to be the greatest player of all time.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
That means you have to win 24 Grand Slams.
25?
I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I hope it does, because that means we're going to have a superstar for 20-plus years.
Yeah.
You know, I did bump into an unnamed player who said, wow, couldn't believe she said that, because that's just never going to happen. So, you know, some players of that age are going to say things like that, are going to, you know, let's face it, piss a lot of really good players off. But at the same time, you have to have that belief in yourself to be that good. I mean, Venus and Serena both said they wanted to be number one in the world when they were the same,
and they were
younger, when they were 10.
Yeah.
So if you don't say that, you're not putting it out there.
Let me take a controversial, it's not an anti-Coco Gauff statement before anybody gasps, but one thing that I always sort of get troubled by, and I also feel is a little bit, it makes me anxious, is just the idea of anointing a prodigy.
Yeah.
Tennis in particular, because of the age rules, and we should probably talk a little bit about what those are and why, but tennis has had a dicey history with young champions coming out in their teens, and a lot of them have sort of spiraled into super self-destructive places, or they've achieved a great height early on. I'm thinking of Tracy Austin or Andrea Yeager. And then... So, you know, and then on the other end of the spectrum, you get a Jennifer Capriati, who kind of embodies a little bit of everything. She was 14 when she made her
superstar.
First Grand Slam.
She actually, I believe, made the quarterfinals here younger than Coco.
Yeah, she was 14, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, you know, she was nose ring. I like a nose ring, but she was busted for shoplifting, stoned in Camino, Florida.
Yeah, I mean, listen, her life sort of spiraled, you know, and then the shoulder surgery took her out of the game. But yeah, I mean, those are the people that you think about that we need to protect, and she is certainly someone that we need to protect. I cannot imagine growing up as a superstar now, and she's become a superstar, let's face it, in the matter of 5 days. But I can't imagine being a superstar in the day and age of social media now. I mean, there's something on her on Instagram today, and she talks about all the people that have written to her, Beyonce, you know, the list is endless.
Well, all you had to say was Beyonce.
Yeah, well, that's why I went with it. I went with the queen first up.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, can you imagine, like, you're 15 years of age and being able to refocus back onto actually playing tennis and not get carried away in this limelight of, you know, look who knows me and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know how you do that. You have to be surrounded by such great, amazing people that literally, like, ground you.
Well, let me ask you a question, because even though I was not a very good tennis player, I was already, like, spending my millions planning my sort of, you know, manse and yacht. So you were, what, at what point did you realize you were good? And then did you have anybody around you being like, calm the fuck down, keep your head down, do the work? Was that something that you experienced? Or
no, people were telling me, fucking get your ass into gear, like practice harder with me. I mean, in my singles. So I mean, I don't know. There are times, though, that you do have to... The most important thing is to manage your emotions, and it's really, really difficult, which is why you see players when they win, like Roger or whomever. I mean, they're so normal when they... You know, they get a little bit excited after matches, but when they win, when they finally win a slam, they cry. They, you know, there's just that blubbering mess of a human being on the court, because they finally, after 2 weeks, allowing themselves to actually feel... I know that sounds weird, but...
Yeah, I always kind of figured it was pretend.
No, it's the one moment... I always say this. If you ever look at, you know, tennis players when they win a slam, or whatever it is, in singles or doubles, and it's the one moment of your life that you cannot control your body movement.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how much you're like, if I win, I'm going to do this. No, I never practice. Like, if I win, I'm going to put my hand up and I'm going to throw my leg out. And
none
of that. It's just that spontaneous.
Exception.
Which, oh. But that's different. He can't control the moment that he wins. I'm talking about the moment.
He can control this.
Well,
and he
should.
Novak Djokovic. Everyone knows who we're talking about. Correct.
Well, the after celebrating is something that is completely choreographed. Yeah. You get to decide. I mean, Ash Barty, I think, is the greatest. She literally walks out in the court and she's just like, claps her racket, like, yep, thanks, bye. But that's her personality. She doesn't want to be this person that's like kissing to... I mean, the kissing to the four corners of the court drives me bonkers, because Maria did it to start, okay?
So Andre Agassi did it to start.
Well, but Andre is Andre. Like, you know, the people love
that. But
don't
thing.
Follow him. Don't follow him.
Oh, so you're saying it's...
It is the guy.
It was his thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't follow him. You know, go out, be blah, blah, blah. But there are two or three women's players that do almost the exact same thing. And I'm like...
Can I see a pantomime? No names named? And maybe if somebody guesses them...
It's so obvious. I mean, come on. It's so easy.
Can I say who it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, Venus Williams.
No, Venus. Oh. Wait, this is Venus. I mean, Venus just does it. No one does a twirl like V. And that's
it. Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, well, I don't want to kick my drink over. I mean, it's only water. No, Venus just does the twirl. No one does
that's
the
a pretty
twirl,
good twirl
like V, other than Serena.
Serena does one twirl.
Maria does the kiss to all four corners. Wozniacki, all four corners.
Shoot me in the face.
I mean, listen, I'm friends with Cara, so she's going to hate me for me saying that. But it's true. I'm like, come on. Like, why? Anyway, we're totally getting off the subject of Wimbledon here.
We are, but we started with Coco Gauff, a prodigy. And just to move, before we move on, the idea of a prodigy. My parents are classical musicians, and one of the things that sort of frequently comes up is these, oh, can you believe this, like, pro player who's coming out of, you know, Taipei, who's already memorized Shostakovich? And it's like, yeah, but they, technical proficiency at an early age doesn't necessarily connote, you know, emotional maturity. And my parents, who are, you know, they're their own people, but they...
That is not how you describe them to me.
Well,
okay?
Give me a couple more of those and we'll have a different sort of psychotherapy podcast experience. But my sort of... I think
how much do you spend on therapy?
A lot. $180 a week.
Okay.
Is that a lot?
But you have insurance, so go on.
Yeah, true. My parents would sort of say something like, you know, just because you can play the notes doesn't mean you can feel them and sort of express them with emotion. And I don't know if that's a good corollary for athletics, but, you know, it does strike me that you don't necessarily know how amazing what you're doing is, and that therefore that allows you to do it, but it also maybe makes it less meaningful. Is that my own mess of a psyche?
No, you're too smart for me. I can't even get into this.
You don't even know what my question is.
No, you go out on the court, you see the ball, you hit the ball, you run. Okay, you know? I mean, she comes from a stock of athletes.
True.
You know, her mom is a track athlete. Her dad was a basketball player.
Yeah.
But I did say this the other day on ESPN. I said, there is no way, no way, that Coco Gauff will be playing tennis if it wasn't for Venus and Serena Williams. Zero chance that she plays.
But do you think that's just because they're African-American role models? I mean,
yes,
think it's a
because
racial
component? Her parents saw Serena and Venus playing tennis and said, this would be a great sport for my kid to play. You can make money, you can make a life for yourself,
you can
get out
world.
Of, you know, any kind of socioeconomical problem if you're good. You know, you become a track athlete, which is what her mom was, or a WNBA player in the U.S. and be a basketball player, you can get a scholarship for sure to college.
Free education, but that's
not necessarily going to set you up for life. So if it was not for Venus and Serena, this phenom at 15 years of age would not be doing what she did, which is why I just, you guys saw the match against Venus, and if you didn't, go to the replay, but when she shakes hands with Venus, I that moment where she literally, and you know, V is a presence, okay? She's a presence. And when you go and shake her hand, it's not like you want to piss her off, but to actually grab her hand and pull her towards her and say, I just want you to know you are the reason I'm doing this. So, I mean, she took the opportunity to actually say that to her at that moment. And, you know, Venus doesn't want to get into a conversation there like, oh, you're so cute. No, she wants to, like, kill her at that moment. Yeah. But there was that moment where you did see Venus turn into this, you know, amazing, you know, hero.
Ambassador,
older sister, mother.
Mentor
moment where she kind of stops herself for a second and she smiled at Corey and she just kind of took it upon herself to be like, wow, like, yeah, cool. You know, she smiled, and it was a really, for me, it was a really beautiful moment in the passing of the torch of these, of this, you know, young generation of black tennis players that come from the United States. So it was a really amazing
moment.
I
think, you know, like Ro was saying, which is why I asked to sort of, you know, introduce us and sort of tie our worlds together, you know, it's about making space and creating visibility, which is why, you know, as a person of color, as a woman, you know, et cetera, you know, it's important to see it so you can be it.
And she's the third generation of black young American players. You know, you think about Madison Keys and Sloane Stephens, and now we're getting the next generation at 15. I mean, Sloane and Madison are in their mid-20s, and now you're getting these 15-year-olds that are coming along. So, you know, I really, it's very difficult for Venus and Serena to look at it that way because they want to still compete and they want to still win.
Yeah.
But their legacy is completely, you know, cemented cemented in gold with what we're seeing, particularly in American tennis.
Let's talk about legacy a little bit. How many people in this audience are English? I don't want to use the wrong terminology.
British. British. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, great. Are you
it's
British?
All right. It's all right. I mean, at one point I was part of you guys, too.
I didn't want
too.
To quibble, but you didn't sound that British, so I was just like, okay. Maybe if I'd said English, you would have said yes.
She's Canadian. I'm kidding.
Yeah. One of the most exciting things, how many of you guys watched at all, Andy and Serena?
Yeah. Amazing, right?
I mean, what an incredible moment. I had tears in my eyes
literally
the whole moment.
She texted me three times that she was crying watching the match. I'm like, you need to get a life.
It's all the therapy.
Just she does
really
cry.
In touch with
we were
my
watching
emotion.
A movie the other day, and I'm a crier. Like, I watch movies, and anything sort of like meaningful, I'm like, you know, I'm right there on a plane, like embarrassing myself with my, you know. But this one cries at like everything. I was like, wow, you really have a problem.
I think I'm just in touch with my emotions.
Okay,
you dick.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, for you guys.
No, but
this is a shtick. I have been sleeping on Renee's couch in Wimbledon Village because it's really hard to get to Wimbledon. And we watched a documentary called "Knock Down the House." Have any of you guys seen that? It's about the female lawmakers inspired to run after Trump's election, and the one who breaks through out of four is Alexandria AOC.
Yeah, she's a badass. Basically.
Yeah, and you know, I'm bawling from minute one, which you know, come on.
Caitlin wants her wife to run for the mayor of New York. But anyway, that's a whole different story.
Well,
but I just want to say something about Andy and Serena. So, I'm always on the grounds very early. and I was walking to the media area, and I see Andy Murray come walking in, kind of shuffling in to the courts. No, it's just how he walks. And he's shuffling in, and he's got, looks like, might have been pajama pants, but I think they might be, were track pants. And then he definitely had his Uggs on. He had Ugg slippers on.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
And I'm like, he's coming in, and I'm like, what are you doing? Are you seriously in your...
What are those?
I go, are you in slippers? That's what my exact... I go, are those slippers? He goes, yeah. He goes, I go, what are you doing? He's like, I got to go sign in for mixed. I was like, that's amazing. Because one of the mixed doubles players has to sign in. You can't have your coach do it. One of the players actually has to physically go and sign in. So I said, well, we just found out what totem pole you're on, which is the bottom in this group.
Totally.
Your ass is out of the house going to sign in.
Yeah, and he's the beta. I mean, nobody's surprised by
he
that.
He said, I'm going to go sign in and then go back and play with my kids. Because it was early. It was like maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. No one's around. But it was so, I mean, the irony that I happened to bump into him, which was fantastic.
That's amazing.
Because he knows I'm going to tell the whole world, and which I did twice. I've told it now in here, and I told it on ESPN.
The third time here. I am... I'm an Andy Murray fan for a number of reasons, but his support of female athletes, his support of equality, he was famously asked, Andy, what does it feel like to be the first tennis player to win 2 gold medals? And what did he say? Oh boy, I believe the Williams sisters did it first, and you're
I was having a blank. I've had 2 drinks. Like, come on.
Yeah, and just quick command of including women in his mind space is just so inspiring and amazing. And you know, Serena famously said when faced with the news of Andy's potential retirement, you know, obviously he's had his hip resurfaced. It's unclear if he's going to come back to playing singles, but at least we have him in doubles, which is amazing. Australia did not look like he was even going to come back.
No.
You know, and so everyone was sort of doing the retirement tour, you know, kind of obituaries about Andy's career. And just honestly, you know, what does it feel like to lose Andy Murray? And, you know.
It was hard. I mean, listen, I know him personally. I'm, you know, we've had Judy Murray on the podcast, who was fantastic. And I love Judy. And the reason both Jamie and Andy, because I don't want to forget about Jamie, but... that they are the way they are is because of the way they've been raised, and they are truly just two of the nicest. Andy's my favorite, honestly. I mean, I love Roger. He walks by, always says hello. He's always so gracious, Rafa as well. But Andy was always the guy that always had...
Is he though? He just comes
to... Rafa?
Yeah.
He always says hello. Like... He always says, hola, René. You know, with the eye, you know, gives
you
me
do
kiss.
A physical impression
gives me
of
the
him.
Kiss,
I didn't realize you were such a gifted physical comedian until tonight.
No.
You can't do like a butt pick or something?
No. Well, no, I'm wearing a thong, so I can't get in it.
Gross.
So,
well, I'm sorry I asked.
Yeah, well, you asked. No, listen, Rafa is a great guy. He's very sweet. He's very kind. He's nice to everybody. But Andy's the funniest of them all. I mean, he's kind. He's funny. He's self-deprecating. You know, he's a bit of a nightmare on the court, but that's his personality. I mean,
yeah,
I can deal with that.
He's a thinker.
I was a nightmare on the court,
I'm
going
to hand the microphone to Mark, who I know has a question. I'm going to also solicit 1 or 2 more questions from the audience before we keep going, because we have a few more topics we're going to want to get to. But I want to make sure our episodes where we have sort of question and answers are our most popular. I don't know why. Maybe just people want to feel included. Here's the place. Mark, I believe you had a question. Mark from Australia, everybody.
Do I have to ask a question first, or do I get it from the audience? Oh, okay. Can I do the dating app question?
Go ahead. That sounds interesting.
I hear that professional athletes have their own dating app. Do you want to explain that a bit more?
Their dating app? No. Yeah. They don't have their own dating app. But there is a dating app called Raya. So I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that, but... Has anyone heard of Raya? Oh, it's a couple. Are you on Raya? Oh, yeah. Bullshit. So Raya is like the Soho House of dating apps. So, you know, if you want to get into the Soho House, for example, you have to have people that allow you, they nominate you and whatever. It's a bit wanky, but, you know, you got to be arty and you got to have a certain amount of Instagram followers and et cetera, et cetera. And so there are a number of tennis players on Raya.
This time last year, we were in Wimbledon Village with our fashion correspondent, Andrea Pekovic, who at the time was single.
Yes.
You don't even know where this
is
going?
Well, I had to think about that.
What month
was that?
Yeah, no, she was single. And she turned on Raya, and it turns out the profiles, you can set it to location-based sort of searching. And so I will... I think it's worth a grounds pass to Wimbledon. If anyone can guess one of the...
Ooh. Okay, one ground... two grounds passes for you and a friend.
Wow, right? Courtesy of Steffi Graf? Are these Steffi Graf's
grounds? No, courtesy
passes?
Of me.
All right, okay. Courtesy of my...
Might be Steffi's booklet of tickets.
All right. You will get to touch paper that Steffi Graf has also touched, and incidentally, Renee Stubbs. If you guess one of the four... tennis players that were on Raya last year looking for hookups in Wimbledon Village. Not curious. Great.
Fognini's married.
But Fognini.
He's married to Flavia, who will...
She should be a little more active in this. He's such a piece of work.
No.
Fabio Fognini? He told everyone that Wimbledon should be bombed yesterday.
Well, but that's different to cheating on your wife.
Also, he called an umpire at the U.S. Open a cocksucker whore and got kicked out. I think, is that the only time an active singles tournament entrant has been kicked out of a Grand Slam for dumb shit they've said to an umpire?
I don't know. I have to look it
up.
I'm
not an expert, but I'm pretty sure that's up there.
It wasn't good.
It wasn't great. Okay, yeah. Great guess. Okay, so two men and two women. I know it's very obscure, but go with us because it's probably going to be worth description. Anybody? Eugenie Bouchard was one of them.
Two tickets to Wimbledon for
you. Two tickets for Wimbledon. You better come up and get them just so we don't forget. Because I feel like everyone will be like,
That's the criteria to get into Wimbledon. Who's on Raya?
Guess. What's your name?
Riley. All right,
Riley, well done.
I'll
get your name and number.
All right, good job.
So to be clear, Raya... From what I've seen, I am a happily married mother of a five-year-old. But from what I've seen, you cannot take a screen grab of Raya. Your phone is stable.
They give you a warning.
It's real serious, this thing. They kick you off if you. So I've heard, break any of the rules. And instead of writing anything about yourself...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If your interests, your hobbies, your sign, it's just a photo. One photo?
You've got a whole story, music, the 16.
You pick what you see is a song and a story, a song and a picture. So Eugenie's was
pictures.
Sure, Eugenie's was
what is that?
You know what that is. Everybody knows what that is.
What are you smoking?
Belly dancing. You know, it's like she's in a bikini. And I
they
think
follow her on Instagram. They know what they're getting.
Right. So it's about what you'd expect. There was one American man. No. Jack Sock. He had...
Are we giving tickets? No.
No.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Oh, my bad. I'll think about it.
maybe for the most obscure last one that we're going to save. So Jack Sock's on there like this.
Caitlin, just for everybody out there on podcast world, is showing some sort of
white gang sign. Yeah. That's embarrassing for everyone. Okay. And his song was Drake. I think it was started from the bottom. And you're just this guy, come on.
Yeah.
Jack Sock. I'll skip to the end. The most obscure but amazing one was a Canadian looking forlorn, pensive. This is definitely for Wimbledon's grounds passes because it's going to be hard to guess. And his song... sort of pensive outside of a balcony on a sort of a European street. And his song was... Lady in Red. Brownage. Who guessed that? Please come up, because that is the silliest, saddest, most insane thing to guess. You just kind of feel for him. You're like, I hope he gets a date, because that's he's lonely. He's lonely, and he's a Canadian, and he's, I don't know. He's just...
Caitlin feels sorry for him, because she's
Canadian.
I do.
He's too earnest for this world, clearly, because he's got Lady
Red. So are we doing two tickets?
Yes, two tickets. Who guessed that?
Oh.
Well, can you guys go together?
All right.
Can you? Does that split families and break hearts?
No, I can do six. It's fine. Two, two, two. Give me your names
Anne
later.
Anne Brun, you've got two, and the gentleman
whose
name I forget.
There you go, two tickets to Wimbledon.
Wow, okay. Should we take one more audience question, or should
we keep moving on? No, I've got no more tickets left.
No, I'm just saying, but people can ask questions. Okay. Right. One more.
Anyone got a question?
Don't be shy. Ask whatever. You listen to our podcast. There's a lot of bullshit that goes on.
I have a question. Title IX. People over here don't appreciate what it is. And it may be worth explaining it, because what effect has it had? The parents of both Madison Keys and Coco Gauff, both parents were American collegiate athletes, where the mothers were serious athletes. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling Title IX has played a role. You know, most of these tennis players have not gone to college, so it's not that necessarily. But they're being raised by mothers that were athletes.
I'll leave that one to Caitlin, because she's the smart one.
I'm
just kidding. It's because she's a Title IX baby, actually.
I am. Great question. So
Wait. When we interviewed Billy, I just need you to know that literally as she is talking about this, again, crying. With Billie Jean. I'm like looking at her like, are you kidding me right now? And Billie, of course, is like...
It's only the most important female... ...symbol and ambassador. Yeah. I did get weepy.
I know. So,
it was great. So Title IX, thank you, great question, is a law that was passed in the 70s that guarantees equal spending on men's and women's sports in all schools. But the most sort of notable manifestation of that is equal spending in men's and women's athletics, because prior to that, women basically had no representation in sports budgets whatsoever. And anybody who knows anything about sports in America knows that the main sports that are funded by collegiate athletics and paid for by, you know, very lucrative broadcast rights are football, American football, and basketball. And American football has about 100 people per team. So to achieve parity in spending, you need to fund a whole lot of women's sports. And so all of a sudden in the 70s and 80s, there was a whole class of people, women, engendered softball teams, soccer teams, tennis teams, volleyball teams, basketball teams through this law. And interestingly, Title IX has also sort of morphed, and Renee's friend and presidential candidate Kirsten Gillibrand is actually very on the forefront of this, using Title IX to prevent campus sexual assault, because again, it's a way to sort of prosecute and safeguard the equality of women as human beings. Who knew that that was important on campuses? And so it's a law that has been stretched to really sort of fill a lot of gaps in our society. So instead of just treating women equally, we have thankfully codification, largely in part to Billie Jean King and the Original Nine, who also founded the Women's Tennis Tour, when Jack Kramer, don't celebrate Jack Kramer in those beautiful old Wilson rackets, because he was the one notably who kept them out of the tour and told them they could keep making $20 per appearance. I'm exaggerating, but something along those lines, instead of being paid something close to what they were worth. Billie Jean and the Original Nine broke off, created the Women's Tour. She testified in front of Congress, and Title IX became a thing. The last thing I'll say about it, other than being a personal beneficiary, having had parents who didn't really know to save money for college, so I...
Hence back to the therapy.
Yeah. They were like, you want to go to college? What? So I got a tennis scholarship and studied journalism, and it was obviously sort of a huge change maker in my life personally, which is why I feel so sort of impassioned by it. But one of the
things... Don't start crying. Don't.
I was thinking about it.
Don't. No, I can tell. I know you so
well. One of the things that I think is super interesting about Title IX is we did a story in the magazine last year about the Super Senior Tour. These are people around the world who play competitively in the age divisions of 60, 70, 80, and there are even a few entrants who play in the 90s. And the story we did focused on the women instead of the men, just because there's fewer of them and you can kind of get to know some of the characters. And the most interesting detail from that story was the difference between the 50s and 60s. As a matter of fact, there was a single year that separated the levels and the abilities of these women and how seriously they had sort of trained and been taught in this case, tennis, but sports generally. And it was the year that Title IX was passed. There was a huge jump in skill level because for the first time, women were having access to real coaches, real equipment, real locker rooms. And it was profound. And all of the women knew about it and talked about it. And they even referred to themselves as like, yeah, but she was a Title IX kid. So like, look how good she is. She's winning this tournament. And so it was just sort of, you know, activism in action in a way that was really sort of both for me personal, but also sort of it was, you know, borne out in what you could see. And so for me, telling the story of Title IX, meeting Billie Jean, crying, kind of, Renee.
Weeping.
Sort of,
weeping.
It wasn't weeping.
It was weeping.
It was, I want to thank you so much for
I had to pull you together.
She was like, get your shit out of your ass and ask the question.
Yeah.
But basically she told me to buck up and not celebrate her because there was lots of work left to be done. So that was the spirit in which I sort of take that question. So thank you. But also, yeah, like making laws on books is important.
I don't know if Title IX, the impact on tennis professionally, I think it's more the WTA founding was really the benefit. Again, Billie was so prevalent in that and making that happen.
Yeah, but don't you think coaches and sort of the infrastructure?
Yes, it's certainly possible in that respect. In a broader picture, and the parents, there's no question about that. But yeah, I mean, we're very lucky that we had someone as amazing as Billie Jean that stood up and really. And one of the things I want to tell you about Billie is that, you know, if you noticed in the podcast what we did with her when she, I asked all the stupid questions and I said, how did it come about that Elton John wrote the song Philadelphia Freedom was for Billie Jean King? And a lot of people don't know that, but when he said, I'm going to write a song about you, let's call it Philadelphia Freedoms, because that was the name of her world team tennis team that she was playing on. And Billie didn't react like, oh, how cool, I'm so amazing, you're writing a song for me. Billie said, what a great gift to give to the people of Philadelphia. You know, and I literally saw her yesterday, and I don't know, we got onto another subject about somebody else yesterday. And I said, you know, Billie, she said, I just wish she would be a little bit kinder with the things that she says, et cetera, et cetera. And it was somebody pretty well known. And I said, Billie, that's the difference between you and her, is that you are just a genuinely good human being. And I said, and I told her that story about the Philadelphia Freedoms. And I said, that's when I knew that about you because I know Billie very well. But I said, that's moments like that that I realized that that's why you are the way you are. It was always the game, Title IX, women's equality, everything about, you know, LGBTQ right, everything about Billie is for the betterment of everybody else and not herself. So, yeah, she's our Shiro.
And she's also been known to throw eggs off of the balcony at Wimbledon Village.
Yeah, but she said she couldn't remember that, so I don't know about that.
You never
but
know.
It was a good story at the time.
It was a good story. Mary Curla told that story. I think we had one more question, and then I think we have, is that true? Did we? You better still have your question.
Hopefully still remember it. I guess Wimbledon has always been, you know, I guess the key sort of a venue where people sort of focus on tennis fashion.
Fashion. We need a putt goal.
Yeah, I've kind of gutted that Andrea is not here today.
She decided to go on a vacation, so you can blame her for that, okay?
Shame. But I guess if your name doesn't start with S in arena, most of tennis fashion these days doesn't necessarily seem to be that memorable. So I want to know, what do you think the tennis world can do to create some more, you know, memorable fashion moments?
Like Anne White's one piece suit at Wimbledon?
Tiny shorts.
Tiny. Oh, I've said that. I want the guys to go back to tiny shorts.
Fucking shorts.
Gay men, women would love that.
Everybody would love it. Their legs are incredible. Felicia
you
Lopez,
like to wear tiny shorts.
I do. It's been called vulgar and inappropriate, but yeah. that's
you're in
my
your
own.
Fred Perry skirt today,
thank
though.
Thank you. Tiny shorts is my answer. I completely agree with you. Tennis fashion is quite boring, and I would like to see anybody, really, but especially the men in very, very, very tiny shorts. I was at the Fred Perry headquarters 2 days ago, and they were showing us the original line after sort of Fred had sort of passed the torch and it became a fashion brand. And they were, like, this might be a too American a reference, Daisy Dukes. Does that sound...
Yeah, he's Australian. We got Dukes of Hazzard.
Great. Come well, on. I'm just making sure that I'm being open.
But you're pretty
everyone.
Young. You
they
might
were,
not remember
they
that.
Were, they look like they would chafe. But I think tiny, tiny shorts is certainly what I would sort of recommend. And I also feel like, you know, Wimbledon did not always have the color restrictions that it
yeah.
does now.
It got worse and worse and worse. When you look
more
back...
More conservative.
The Pat Cash, you know, headband that he wore back in the day and that he's sort of still pumping away with now.
What is pumping away with?
Just, you know, it's out there. He walked into Wimbledon the other day with a backpack on, and on the bottom of it was his trademark. His,
you know,
like,
what? If you got a signature look, you know.
That's what I'm saying. It's fine. But if in today's day and age, that would not be allowed at Wimbledon. That headband yeah. would not be allowed. If you look back at the years of, you know, Boris winning... Talk about
I
weepy.
Do, it's, yeah.
She saw Boris the other day. I took a photo with her and Boris, and I got one photo because I thought it was a great picture already, and I was like, I don't need any more. And then we got
this
it
is
in
how
the
I
car.
Looked in the photo.
Yeah. So I just like, said she was stoned by the end of the night. That's it. That's
I basically looked stoned. I was so happy to meet Boris Becker.
No, but there was so much color on the players back in the day. So I don't know where the analness came from with Wimbledon. Because, you know, even it got to the point where your swoosh was too big. There was color on your shoes. It was like, you know, obviously you remember the famous pants that Venus wore that year that was just like, wow, what's going on under the skirt? It's
didn't you tell me a story about you getting... wearing non-white tennis undies or something like that? Was that something I hallucinated? Somebody had to go run back to the locker room because they had a sports bra or some sort of under thing.
Yeah,
was, even the
I don't know if it was me, but it was...
even the under
I always
are,
abided by the rules, but... no, but yeah, it got to the point where it got ridiculous. It's ridiculous now.
Yeah.
And I see Ash Barty has the little tiny stripes now, and I was thinking, is that too much? You know, so yeah, it's got, I don't know. I mean, when it comes to fashion and tennis.
I'm ready to make some bold pronouncements, though, on the back of my shorts, my calling for short shorts. Tiny shorts, I want to see a return to more natural fabrics. I think performance wear is boring. I mean that.
Like linen?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you have to change...
Have you seen linen when it sweats?
Yeah, I've sweat in linen. I'm a very sweaty person. You've already established that.
I have.
Yeah, but my point is natural fabric, like the original peak polos. The problem with tennis clothes is you can't wear them off the court and back again. And I think that we should all be embracing a look that's a little bit more, you know, from the streets to the courts to the boudoir. And that, to me, would be...
That's why you have your magazine, because you can put all that in there. Why don't you write a story about that next edition?
Great. This is how we get all of our great ideas.
Right,
for the
that's
magazine.
A great question, but I think that, you know, Nike and Adidas and all of them, they're always trying to sort of think they're pushing the envelope, but really they don't, so I don't know. I mean, it's crazy.
Okay,
but you do
have
a few players like Venus and et cetera trying to do their own lines as well.
We should talk before we go because we have time and two more tickets. Is that true?
Oh, no. I already gave them out. Cause
is that
these
six?
Two, yeah, that's
oh,
six.
We have no more prizes. You guys no. might as well leave right now. Sorry, we have nothing good left for
no,
you.
No, I want to talk a little bit about a situation in Australia that happened last week when Ash Barty got put onto an outer court and as world number one, French Open champion. But, you know, you're having to deal with seven-time Wimbledon champion and Serena and the English flavor, like Tamara Konta's on the court against a two-time champion and Kvitova on center court, and Ash is again on court two. But Australia, Channel 7 decided to show Nick Kyrgios's match, his first round against Jordan Thompson over Ash Barty. And I do some crosses for Channel 7 still.
Wait, you know. Explain what a cross is.
So when I'm doing at 10:20 at night, I do a cross to our morning program. So in the US, the Today Show or whatever. And
no
here
big
in,
deal, just the
no,
Today
whatever.
Show. You might have heard of it.
All right. Anyway, so I do my thing and it's all been about Ash Barty. Ash Barty, Ash Barty, Ash Barty, Ash Barty. Can't say it enough. World number one. And
in
then
America,
the first
we say
day,
Ash Barty.
Ash Barty.
Fine.
And then all of a sudden, you know, the first day of play that she goes out into the court and we've been talking about her for 3-4 days nonstop. And then Nick Kyrgios was on at the same time. And Channel 7 chose to go with the 5-set match with Jordan Thompson, who was another Australian. And there was a lot of people in Australia that were pissed off that Ash Barty wasn't getting sort of like, she wasn't the one on TV.
Her due.
Getting her due. Then the numbers came out for Channel 7 on that match in particular, round one, Jordan Thompson, who's not really well known in Australia, playing against Nick Kyrgios. It's all because it's Nick. It had the most numbers that Channel 7 had from the last year's men's final. So people got up to watch at the crack of crack at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in Australia. That's just The crack of crack. It's like really early in the morning.
Great, I went with it.
More people watched Nick Kyrgios's match than the men's final last year at Wimbledon.
The men's final.
So that's the problem that you face as a producer and a network, is that he brings in numbers. And the reason he does is because he's Nick.
Quick poll before we go on about Nick Kyrgios, and I think we have time for one more question, and then they're going to kick us out of here. How many of you guys like Nick Kyrgios? But round of sort of applause meter, because I can't really see hands. Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of in the front. And then how many people are like, geez, a disgrace to tennis. He should be kicked out.
Well, see, this is what we're dealing with. So, and we do have this conversation in our production meetings for television when we do talk about Nick. And every producer...
Just for the uninitiated, Nick Kyrgios, 25, bad boy of Australia. He's got a lot of shavings into his eyebrows.
Well, he's
slipped out of
those. He's not as many anymore.
I'm into it, but I'm just saying he's known for, you know...
And I will tell you guys, Nick was actually going to come here tonight, but he ended up flying home because he lost his mixed doubles the other day. Nick does those things. He does step out of his comfort zone. He does things for... You know, friends, other journalists. You know, he's
charities,
a little
children.
Charities for children. He's a very mixed bag of chocolates, fruit. I was going to say, but I don't know.
Yeah, you eat them at the crack of crack. I'm pretty sure.
I like Nick. When you get him one-on-one, he's actually very endearing. He's very shy, but he has this bipolar personality when he gets on the tennis court. He doesn't love the sport. I think he has a fear of failure, and I think that stops him a lot. But he brings in numbers, you guys. Like, you cannot take your eyes off Nick Kyrgios when he's playing a match. And that match the other day with Rafael Nadal was it was unbelievable. I mean, he really tried, and he's not a particularly big lover of Rafa, as you know from things that he said in the press. And he really tried, and you saw how good he could be if he can put it all together. I just don't know how much he wants it. I don't know how much he wants to be that guy every week. But we should, you know, without the antics, I've said to him, I don't care what you do on the tennis court, just try all the time. And if you're not going to try, I have a problem with that. That's the only thing I don't care about. The antics, the throwing the chair on the court and the ball out of the stands and the
getting
carrying
in a fight with a fan in Miami.
Like, that stuff doesn't truly... I kind of cringe sometimes, but it doesn't really bother me. I mean, I was a hothead and a nightmare on the court as well. Shut up. And we'll take this outside.
We already have.
But, you know, I can understand the sort of juxtaposition of where he is mentally on the court sometimes. But, you know, I think underneath he's just a bit lost sometimes. And we need him in the sport. We just hope that he stays in the sport for a lot longer and he can get himself together.
I just want to add something, because I think, you know, when you talk about his ratings and you talk about why certain people, not everyone, but certain people in this room are obviously super excited about him. What I like about him and what I am so excited by is somebody who sort of sits adjacent to the tennis world but not totally in it, having this independent magazine, is just the idea that what he does and how he plays and how he sort of treats the hallowed ritual of the sport as something like the sort of silly and sometimes arbitrary thing that it is, feels and looks a lot like other sports. He makes a ton of sense.
He would
as a
like
basketball.
To do his own clothing line, for example.
Right.
You know, he'd love to have basketball clothes out there and
right.
do stuff.
He makes sense as a basketball player. He makes sense as a footballer. He makes sense as a hockey player, because he's truly somebody who, you know, sort of likes the jawing, likes the kind of shit talking, but also, you know, is tremendously gifted.
And
as
I can
athlete.
Tell you, I saw him the next day, and he was not happy that he lost that match. He really, really wanted to win badly. And I mean, you know, the conversation in the press conference about, you know, why didn't you say sorry? He's like, why would I say sorry? It didn't even hit him. It didn't hit him. If you look at the replay, it actually hit Rafa's racket. He was just, I would imagine too, when a ball comes at you that hard, it is very scary as a player. You don't see it come at you that often, and Nick can produce a ball like that.
Sure.
It's just insane. It's insane. It's like a rocket. So, you know, it's sort of jarring to you, and you kind of expect someone to just go, sorry, but he's not going to get a sorry from Nick in that moment. So that's why he was so ticked off in the post-match interview. He's like, why would I say sorry? The guy's got $1 million, millions and billions and millions of dollars in the bank. He's got 18 Grand Slams. Why am I feeling sorry for him? So
I think the only thing he did wrong was not going up and following up with, like,
You ever been to Peg City? You have now. I mean, that's like, that's...
You wanted him to say that?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at the handshake, Rafa was way saltier in the handshake.
What did it look like?
Nick actually went in to give him a little bit more love, but Rafa was not having it. But, you know, that's exactly what it was.
It was just...
the ignorance of you sitting there. But you know what I loved about that? I said, that was seriously mano a mano, that match. It was old school. It was like Connors playing, you know, not John. It was like... Connors, I guess it was like Connors and McEnroe in some respects.
They fucking hated each other.
Yeah, and you know, Borg and McEnroe, it was just two different personalities, and I love that. I wish tennis was more like that. I wish we had more personalities that weren't afraid to show it.
Last question, and then we're getting the wrap-up signal. Mark is on the microphone.
You can ask gossipy questions as well, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not prepared for that, so. What do you think of Tomic being fined his first round winnings? I mean, did he not come through qualifying anyway?
Another polarizing Australian. Don't we love them? Another polarizing question as well, because some people are like, look, he played the three sets. He didn't give it his best. He might consider that that was just the best that he could do that day. Okay, time out.
Bernie Tomic, tremendously talented, very haphazard.
He was fined his entire first round prize money for not giving a good enough effort in his
fined
match.
£56,000.
I don't think it's that much. I think it's in the 40s, £45,000. It may be $56,000, which is a lot of money. But, I mean, again, it's the same thing. Just try. Just look like you're trying. If you're losing a three-set match in under an hour, there's some problems there. And this is the second time now that he's done that here at Wimbledon. So the eyes are on him, and he has to understand that. He has to understand the eyes are on him. So, you know.
Here's my question. Why does he keep turning up?
I don't know.
Do you think it's money, though? Do you think it's just the appearance fees?
You know, it was a tough draw, I will say that. But I don't know. I don't know why these guys do what they do. I really don't. It's nothing that I can even remotely think about. I mean, if anyone ever saw me play, there was never a point that I didn't try for. You know, I mean, as crazy as I was, the sport meant more to me. Winning meant more to me, you know. So I don't understand how the mentality of these guys sometimes is. And I don't know if it's just... I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. I don't get it.
I'm going to take this to my therapist and see what he thinks.
Hey, can you ask him? Because I don't want to pay him. He's too expensive.
He's very expensive.
We live in New York.
Very good. Yeah, it's New York prices. I want to answer that question. And then.
Okay.
Do you mind?
Okay.
So the question was, how do we get people to sort of participate in the podcast? And I think Renee's Rolodex, her credibility, her friendships, her relationships on the tour speak for themselves, because I think she's somebody who tells it straight and... is fun and jovial and invites a sort of wide range of players and thinkers and athletes, and that's a total asset. I also think...
I tackle them, I give them a drink, and I say, if you don't do this, I'm going to do terrible things to you.
But I also think, and this ties into what we're trying to do with the magazine as well, which is, you know, I think the truest gift you can sort of give anybody is... to see them and to sort of acknowledge who they are. And maybe it's positive or maybe it's negative, but I truly think that there's some, you know, privilege and sort of interesting empathy that comes with trying to truly understand people. And I think athletes are often, especially in the tennis space, are not often very well educated. Some of them are very, very smart and very worldly, and some of them are very self-aware, but they're not often given a platform to be understood in any sort of meaningful way. And if you go into the press room at one of these tournaments, it'll fucking depress you, because these are people who don't leave their desks. They're people who are filing on deadline. Some of them are great. Most of them are just ossified, bored, sort of antagonistic headline clickbait writers. And truly, it's depressing in there, because the sport deserves better. And, you know, that's no small reason that we started a magazine that sort of challenges the notions of what storytelling in tennis is. But I think what attracts subjects is obviously the idea of having fun and having a real relaxed conversation, but it's something we talk about all the time, which is,
and this is true of the magazine in its pages as well, we're really trying to truly see people for who they are, tell the story. Some of them are famous. Some of them are head cases. Benoit Paire is one of my favorite stories that we've done because he's a fucking lunatic. But that's interesting fodder for digestion. And the Tomic question, the Nick Curios interest, all sort of speaks to the same thing, which is these are people who do spectacular things with their body on a regular basis, and it's incredibly entertaining way, but they're very fragile, interesting, confused multitudes containing human beings. And I think that to me is...
So I'll answer this a little less educationally <In English. laughs> and say my goal when I do post-match interviews, which I've done for a number of years now, and I see people in the locker room. I know these players. I see them in the locker room. I know what they're going through. I've had conversations with them about their life, their ups, their downs, their depressing moments, the hard times, the times that they've cried, why they're crying. Could be a boyfriend, could be a girlfriend, could be parents, could be anything that they go through in their lives. And I think that what you see is them play tennis. You see that 1.5 minute post-match interview that I may do with them or whoever does with them. And you think, you know them, right? You're like, you pull for them or you hate them, and it's the way they are on the court. And it's like so many players that you probably hate are probably the best people that you don't know. And it could be the ones that you love, the biggest assholes, and I can tell you many of them. Not tonight. But my goal was, when I talked to Caitlin about doing this podcast, is that I do honestly say this to them when I do talk to them about wanting to do the podcast. It's 45 minutes to an hour of your life or less, whatever you want it to be. Tell people your story. Let them know the little things about you that they'll never know about watching you play tennis and doing a one-minute clip on a TV that, you know, gets edited like you cannot imagine from ESPN. You can do a 10, 15-minute interview with somebody, and it's amazing, and you'll hear 30 seconds of it on a broadcast. And then the narrative is from the editor, the music, whatever. It's not from the player. So my goal with them is I want them to hear, you know, the Sam Stosur one, for example. Like, the story that she told, it gave me goosebumps when she said about Serena, when Serena clapped that one shot at the US Open, and she said it calmed her so much that she was able to focus and refocus on playing the match. She said, I didn't care about the crowd yelling and screaming and booing at me, but when I looked and I saw Serena clapped me, I knew that she wasn't mad at me. And I said, literally when she told that story, I got goosebumps. I'm like, oh my God, because she said, I've never really told that story to anybody. And so those are the moments that I want these players to tell me when they and us when they're doing their podcast, because you would I didn't know that. I know Sam really well, and she'd never told me that story. She never told me the story about I want to be a party pooper tomorrow. So it's like, and if you haven't listened to that episode of Sam's, it's really, really good, because those are the stories we want people to understand. These people, they're athletes. You love them, you hate them, but they're human, and maybe there's part of them that you actually go, that's like me, you know? So they're human and they go through really tough times. And so my goal is to actually make them be what I see in the locker room or when I see them as a normal people, which you don't get to see, which is what I want you to see. I want you to hear it and I want you to see it. So that's always my goal when I do, when we do these.
And on occasion we let them drink.
We do?
Pam?
Oh, yeah. Well, I will tell you, Pam Shriver's podcast got edited big time. Mainly because she called me the next day and she's like, hey, Stubbsy, you know that story I told you about so-and-so? Can you cut that out? And I was like, damn it, yes. Yeah. Because we do tell them. We do edit it. And so if you...
We.
Caitlin.
Yeah.
I do the talking. She does the editing. Thank God. But, yeah, so Pam
so
did call me
So somewhere out
up.
There exists amazing tape of
we have bloopers
tipsy. Yeah, it's amazing.
That maybe
we should actually probably blackmail her so that we don't release that.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Anyway, you'll have to take our word for it. We have to wrap this up. You guys,
thank you so
much for coming.
Honestly,
thanks
we
for
really
coming to see us.
You.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for the questions. And if you happen to be at Wimbledon in the next couple of days, I'll be there tomorrow. Renee is here through the fortnight.
I'm there every day.
Having
I'm
tea
playing
with the queen
next week. So God,
and she's
if
playing
you are
next
out
week,
there.
Right. Thank you, guys. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's it for this episode of the Racquet Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri and the team at Acast. Find us at racquetmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.